Here it comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. I've said this before, but can you tell from the radio sound that I have a big smile on my face? I do. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. Thank you for joining me tonight. And joining us in studio tonight is Ty Taylor. And he is a PhD student in ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona. And I met him because he is also a Carson Scholar, which we might have time to talk a little bit about, at the Institute of the Environment at the University of Arizona. And he literally had the audience that he was presenting to from Hello. He is passionate about what he does, which is, I tell everybody, I'm having this guy on my show that lives in the top of trees in the Amazon part of the year. And to me, that is one of the most outrageous, challenging things that any human being could ever do. I would be terrified, even though I've been to the Amazon. And we're going to talk about his background and what he has studied. And just a little shout out now and before we're over, just remember to follow Mrs. Green on Facebook, Twitter, and now I love to add and Pinterest, because you find out about guests like Ty. And I'm saying it right. It is Ty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tyene is my whole name.
Tyene. All right. And that. I said, okay. My website at mrsgreensworld.com. There will be a podcast of this available quite soon. So why don't we start with you and talk a little bit about your background and what ignited your passion from a very long time ago.
Great. Sounds good. Well, first, thanks so much for having me on your show.
It's our pleasure.
Cool opportunity. I always love telling people about interesting things that they may have never heard about before. I grew up in Alaska, in Fairbanks in the subarctic, very cold place and dark for a lot of time of the year, but also a place of vast wilderness. And that is kind of that right there is sort of defined everywhere that I go in my life. I love, places of vast wilderness, and usually that comes with a pretty uncomfortable climate, because where there's an
you went from really freezing cold to really, really hot.
Exactly, because wherever there's an uncomfortable climate, there are fewer people and more wilderness. And vast wilderness is so fascinating and interesting. And that's part of what brought me to the tropics as well, I guess. As a kid, my parents would save up money and we'd go occasionally on Christmas breaks to Costa Rica. And that started my love for the tropics, because I came from such a different, vast and beautiful wilderness to this tropical forest. It was like nothing I had ever seen before, you know, from these glaciated mountains and very simple forests of just a couple of tree species to this incredibly dynamic wall of green, basically, that was incomprehensible at first. But as we went back and as I got to know things better, I found it's such a beautiful forest full of so many stories and so dynamic. And I also, I guess, witnessed some of my first experiences of impacts on the landscape that people have. Because as we'd go back to some of the lodges that we liked and where we would go hiking in the forest, we found kind of what used to be these rustic little cabins transfigured into these monstrosities of, tourist buildings.
The McCabins. Yeah, you know, like a McMansion. Now, one of the places I have been with our family is Costa Rica. And you, when you describe it, it is exciting beyond belief. And it also, there's the humor on my part, because I will tell you what, when we went into the rainforest in Costa Rica, I don't think I got more than like 2 feet away from the guide. Because if you go off those paths, people can't conceive of how quickly you can't really see the sun a lot, and you don't know which way's north and which way's south. So if you're not with your guide, you could be lost in translation there.
Yeah, unless you bring your compass and know how to use it and keep track of where you are. It is possible to go off
trail. Which would be why I'd want to be with someone like you. It's like, okay, I'm going to stay on that. So tell us about what you're studying at the university and what your PhD is, and let's get into really the heart of the matter of what you're doing and explaining it to people.
My PhD is generally in ecology and evolutionary biology and understanding those fundamentals of science that we have to understand to be able to do science about the natural world. But specifically, my research focuses on tropical forest interactions with climate change. And I say interactions because, you know, you might think, well, we want to know how tropical forests will respond to climate change because, you know, if climate change negatively affects them, then we know what that could mean for biodiversity because, of course, tropical forests store the, you know, greatest amounts of diversity on the planet. And that diversity can house medicines and answers, you know, to questions that we have. But we also, what people don't think about is tropical forests also have a large influence on the climate itself. They control a lot of aspects of the climate.
And globally.
Globally, right. And locally at
yes.
multiple scales. And so not only do we need to understand how they're going to respond to climate change, but those responses in turn determine what climate change will look like, what the future climate will look like.
So can you literally tell us, I mean, this it's inquiring minds want to know, and I always say if I want to know, I know there are other people that want to know. When you go there and you're literally doing your study, what do you do? Tell us what a day looks like and what kind of samples are you taking? Are you really on top of the trees? And who do you partner with? I mean, I understand I've been to Costa Rica and I've been to the rainforest to see some of the devastation, but what do you do when you're there to study that you can then report on the impact on the planet?
So I do quite a lot of things, as most scientists do, who get distracted by all the ideas they have and want to pursue.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah, so it changes. I started doing research in Costa Rica and climbing trees to... I was studying these forests that grow on top of the trees in tropical forests, which you might know about if you've been to a tropical wet forest, a very rainy one where you have like huge communities of plants. You could have 100 plant species growing on the top of a single tree, growing all over its branches. And I was studying this interaction between those plants and a fungus that lives with their roots, and the fungus that produces a protein that builds up in the soils to huge concentrations in these I say soils, in the canopy on these very large branches. You get these piles of organic matter all held together by living in dead roots, this network. And sometimes it says...
On the canopy, on the very top.
Yeah, on the branches. So I climb up there and I'm walking around on what looks like the forest floor on a branch. And, you know, I'm collecting these sort of soil, I put quotation marks around that, samples on these branches, which is just this accumulation of organic matter. And sometimes I would have to reach all the way to my shoulder to where my fingertips would touch the branch, and like the top of the soil is up at my shoulder. So builds up in these huge amounts. This protein produced by the fungus that lives in the roots of the plants living on top of the trees builds up in these soils and is deposited as the rain washes it out onto the forest floor around the roots of the tree. And this protein has a lot of big effects on soils. It's called glomalin. It's been studied in agricultural settings because it builds up to large concentrations and it binds together particles in the soil, creating aggregates, and that gives the soil structure. And you need structure for, you know, roots to be able to grow through it, for bacteria to live in empty spaces, for water to infiltrate, for fungi to move through it. All these things, structure is really important. And it also stores a lot of carbon in this protein and in these aggregates that it creates. And carbon is important for binding nutrients in the soil, you know, and for general plant health. So you have this interesting interaction where people have studied this protein around the world in ground soils, but nobody had ever looked for it in the canopy before. And I really actually just wanted to climb trees and do research in the tropics as my final undergrad project.
God.
So I managed to find an interesting study, and someone had a little bit of data on this protein from the canopy. So I went and found tons of it in lots of different trees and then mapped its accumulation on the floor beneath these trees and found that this interesting interaction between the plants growing on the trees, the fungus that lives in their roots, and the host tree itself seems to be contributing to the health of the soil around the tree's root system. So that
and
was,
where specifically are you? Did you study when you first started? Which part of the Amazon, the vast Amazon in South America?
Well, this was in Costa Rica when I started there.
Okay,
and that was
okay,
at La
right.
Selva, biological station on the Pacific coast.
Okay.
And I went to the Amazon for the first time with a field course, actually, a couple of years ago. This is a field course that my advisor puts on through a program called Amazon PIRE, which is a National Science Foundation program. PIRE is Partnership for International Research and Education. And this was a several-year funding program that funds these international field courses and also funds grad students like me to do their research.
It's such a sacrifice. I mean, I just have to say that because I know I want to be involved in helping to raise money for the Carson Scholars Program. I'll just flat out say it, and Stephanie Sklar will be so happy that I said it. But after I went and heard the presentation of what I call You Bright Young Minds are doing, it's the ultimate hope for the planet. And I have to stay in that place of hope. And you really don't get a lot of money. So there's a lot of personal sacrifice for what you do. When I found out the amount of the scholarships, I'm like, really? Does that even pay for their airfare? No. So, well, that'll be another show. Maybe we'll have a Mrs. Greenathon and we'll raise money for the Carson Scholars Program.
Yeah, and it's true. We do have to make a lot of sacrifices. I actually used to work in the Alaskan oil field for several years, and this is partly how I funded my undergraduate studies. And then I actually kept doing that study in Costa Rica, partly funding it by money that I made in the oil field. And I made a lot more money there and could have kept, stayed up there and had a pretty lucrative future, I think, if I wanted to. But I came to do, come back to grad school and continue with tropical research because I thought that would make a difference for the planet, and it was more interesting to me as well.
Well, I thank God for people like you. So there you go, because you are the hope for the future. So when you study the fungus, what is your hope for the application of all of that knowledge on a global scale? Because you're not just doing it in a vacuum. You want to have a purpose for what you find and apply it, because it is applied science. So what is your application for that? Sharing it with the scientific community, helping other regions?
Yeah, for that study in particular, sharing with the scientific community is important. And I still need to publish that, actually. The implications of that study are that this diversity of plants that grows on top of the trees can actually contribute to the health of soil around the trees themselves. And so there are, for example, a lot of agricultural systems where shade trees are used, or also, in pastures, shade trees are often kept, which usually are very large emergent canopy trees.
Right.
And that helps, provide shade for cattle. But my argument from this study would be that if we maintain these large emergent canopy trees in shade plantations or in pastures that are covered in all of these epiphytes, that's what the name for these plants are that grow on tops of the trees, then that will help contribute to the soil health. And soil health, long-term soil health, is really important in the tropics because the soil layer, the layer of active organic soil, is generally very, very shallow.
I was going to say it's so thin.
Right.
Because it has to absorb all that rain when it rains. Boom.
And it's just the microbes are so active, they eat everything immediately. And so it doesn't build up into these deep layers of humus that you get in temperate rainforests, for example. So anything you can do to maintain long-term soil health is useful. And I think that keeping, all of these epiphytes on large emergent canopy trees in plantations and pastures could help, the longevity and productivity of those systems. And along with that, that just maintains a huge amount of diversity in that system. So you'll also get things like birds coming and using the epiphytes, insects as well. And then you get kind of this other whole suite of what people call ecosystem services, where, for example, birds who come and visit these natural resources like the epiphytes in the trees, may also come and pick off pests off of your crops. And
right.
People are incorporating that kind of model, especially in terms of pest control, in a lot of tropical agricultural systems.
As opposed to a chemical pesticide.
Exactly.
It's just, I mean, I'll never forget the first time I had an organic winery on, and I said, how do you control the pests? And they said, the size of the birdhouses.
Yeah.
I was like, are you kidding me? Because the little birds will come and get the little bugs. So there is a way to do it that doesn't necessarily have to be a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the questions that you said we could talk about, what can the Biosphere 2 tropical forest 20 years inside a hot greenhouse tell us about the future of tropical forests in a warmer climate? I think that is a great question that you came up with.
Yeah, it is a surprisingly interesting question because I came here in 2010, and my first goal before becoming a graduate student, I was employed at Biosphere 2, and I lived there actually for 9 months.
Oh my goodness.
And I did a survey of the tropical forest to see who was left, which plant species do we still have? Because that hadn't been done since 2000, since when Columbia University ran it.
Right, right.
And so we had to know what was there so that we could do research. That's kind of the first thing that you have to do. You got to know who is there. And then I thought, well, okay, I've done all this work, I've done this survey, I've figured out who is here. What else can I do with this? Is there a story maybe in how the plant community has changed over time? And that question has actually really led me down my current road of thinking and research, not only in Biosphere 2, but in the Amazon, and kind of understanding how tropical forests interact with climate change. Because we had this giant greenhouse in Arizona, and greenhouses are hot, no matter what you do. I mean, they run AC,
right?
But still, it's hot. I mean, average temperatures in there are about 5 to 7 degrees centigrade hotter than your average Amazon forest.
And it's usually muggy without any breath of fresh air. I mean, I'm a big fan of the biosphere. I am. So, but it is. You're right.
Yeah, and especially if you climb up to the level of the tree canopies, which we do all the time, do all kinds of climbing in there, and it's extremely hot. You know, the heat builds up towards the roof. So we've had this heat filter, and interestingly, 5 to 7 degrees C hotter is about what we expect by the end of this century in the Amazon. At least it's sort of on the upper range. And a lot of everybody is trying to figure out now, you know, okay, how is the Amazon forest going to respond to these increases in temperature? And that's a complicated story to address. And a lot of what we do to predict things like, you know, large scale processes like this are use computer simulations and put all the knowledge we have together into a computer simulation and say, okay, what's going to happen? And some of these simulations predict that the Amazon forest will actually transition into savanna. So most of the forest will die back and will be taken over by savanna. And that means a huge loss of carbon to the atmosphere. And so this is why I said before, you know, these interactions with climate change, not just responses to climate change, are important. Because if all the forest dies off, and this is a very large forest, about half the size of the continental U.S. or 3 times the size of Alaska, you know, that's a lot of trees. And if all of that carbon, if all those trees die, they basically get eaten up by the microbes, you know, and the carbon that was in those trees gets breathed into the atmosphere, and that contributes even more to warming. So,
and I don't want to get into this a lot because I want to get into more of what you're doing and the hope, possibility, and change part. But when you put in the predict the future in the computer and do a scenario, is it accelerating? Do you want to take a stand? And if it is being accelerated by the number of people on the planet, is it being accelerated by deforestation? Or is it just what's going to happen because it's going to be at the end of the century and we're in cycles? That was about 4 questions. So take whichever one you want.
Yeah. To answer them all sort of together, you don't even need computer simulations. There's just basic physics that tells you that when you put greenhouse gases into air, the climate warms. And that's, you know, that's just an inarguable fact. And as we add people to the world, what we do is we end up cutting down a lot more forests. We use a lot of resources, and we've also been burning a lot of fossil fuels, and that puts greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. So there's also no doubt, you know, you don't need a computer simulation to tell you that more people and more fossil fuel consumption and more forest degradation means more carbon into the atmosphere, and that means greater
acceleration.
Warming. So what the models, the computer simulations do is just try and predict how much. We know that it's happening. But we need to know how much. What is that impact going to be in terms of global temperatures and local temperatures, and then on the forests and on the resources that we use and on our own livelihoods? So
when I went to the rainforest, because I had to, because I'm Mrs. Green, I didn't understand at the time what an important part of my journey it was. The most obvious thing that sounds ridiculous to talk about is you think of the deforestation. To me, that's awful, and oh my gosh, all those trees. What you see when you go there that makes you want to weep if you're a consciously living human being is the erosion. Because I don't know why, but you think about everything being cut and then it rains and it looks like a wasteland because it's such intense rain. One day when we were in Costa Rica, my husband asked the one of the hosts, how much did it rain last night? And she said, 13 inches. How much do we get here in a year? I think maybe 13 inches. So that's devastating. But let's talk about, to me, what I learned in really going deep in the forest. I was not in a tour boat. I want to make that perfectly clear. Mrs. Green kind of roughed it. Is some of the major drug companies in the world are sending teams down there to do research to help develop cures for cancer and maybe the cure for AIDS. It's not just an environmental high road. So the devastation of them doesn't make sense from any point of view that I can understand. Can you just like expand on that a little bit? Because you've spent a lot more time down there than I have.
Yeah, well, And I could also use that to even segue back into Biosphere 2, because, I mean, there are the Amazon and other tropical forests are so full of so many species.
We don't even have a clue of all of them. Do you agree with that?
Yeah,
I don't think
yeah.
we know. I don't think everything's...
We don't know what all of them are, that's for sure. If you go out and do enough transects of forests, and transects are just these lines that we walk identifying trees and collecting specimens from those trees, you'll eventually just, you know, continually grab unidentified species. And eventually somebody will have to try and identify that. And, you know, in the Amazon, there have been quite a lot of sampling campaigns, you know, like from the old British explorers even, who went out and spent years and years in the Amazon collecting plant species. And there are still vast swaths that are unsampled in lowland Amazonia. So there's a lot that we don't know. And, you know, there are people who have spent their lives, like Richard Evans Schultes, traveling around the Amazon and learning the medicinal uses of plants from indigenous peoples. And their knowledge is so vast. It's really surprising.
So vast.
There's a great
so
book, if anyone listening is interested in that topic, called One River by Wade Davis. Botanical Explorations in the Amazon Forest is the subtitle. It's an amazing book, largely cataloging Richard Evans Schultes' trips through the Amazon, learning about medicinal uses of plants. And so, yes, there's a lot of that out there. And there are so many cures for diseases that we certainly have no idea of now. And so to kind of bring that back into my research, I'm trying to understand the dynamics of the responses of species. Because one way that you can look at a forest is kind of a giant green leaf.
Right.
You know, or that all plants are the same and they all, you know, take in carbon and they respire carbon and, you know, they also let out water and oxygen. But species do have different strategies, and it may be overwhelmingly complex how many species there are out there, but there actually are patterns also that you can find among closely related species, for example. So in Biosphere 2, this is the kind of thing that I was looking at. How has a diverse tropical community responded to 20 years at high temperatures? And this constitutes the world's first experiment where we've actually heated up a tropical forest, because you can't normally do that. People can study individual plants, but there are so many species out there, it's hard to, you know, characterize what each one of them is going to do. So here we sort of accidentally, you know, this wasn't the intention of building the biosphere, but it just turned out that the place was hotter than normal tropical forest for 20 years. And I got to see how that plant community has changed. And there's been a lot of extinction. There were over 400 species originally planted in there, and now there are somewhere around 80 of plants. And so, but that extinction could be due to a lot of different reasons.
Right, right. It's not all man caused by deforestation.
Right. I mean, in Biosphere 2, it's just caused by all kinds of things. I think high temperatures has been one of the biggest environmental impacts, but it's also they're all competing with each other inside. But I got to see, you know, what kind of signal does that leave in the plant community? And in the plant community, I've learned to use some interesting tools to analyze changes. And one of them is called community phylogenetics. And basically what that is it looks at the evolutionary tree that you would draw depicting all of the plants that are present in that community. And the evolutionary tree is just like a family tree where, say, two sister species are just like two sisters in a family that share a mother. And on the evolutionary tree, that mother is the common ancestor. And you can draw relationships among all the species that are present in a community by building that kind of family tree or evolutionary tree. And then you can look at patterns of structure, of change in structure of that evolutionary tree. And one thing that we found in the plant community in Biosphere 2 and how it's changed is that whole groups of species often died off together. So closely related species share similar characteristics and ways of interacting with the environment. And so you have, for example, families of species. This is kind of one of the taxonomic groupings that we put on them, just like in a family tree. You know, families of closely related species, since they have similar ways of interacting with the environment, they will all either stay together in a unique environment or following some perturbation, or all be kicked out because they don't have the characteristics required to function in that environment. And that's an interesting and kind of useful signal for us, because there are thousands of species in tropical forests, and it could be totally overwhelming to try and, you know, understand each of the different strategies that each species has for interacting with the environment, and then to predict, okay, how much of this forest will be degraded based on its species composition. But if you understand the characteristics of groups of related species, that makes it a lot more manageable, because we can go into a forest and say, you know, characterize all of the plant families that are in there instead of just all of the species, and say something about how that forest might respond to a changing climate.
You know, it's almost becoming cliche for me, and I just can't believe it. I know what's going to happen next is that we're going to make Down to Earth with Mrs. Green an hour show. But we have, seriously, it's like we have 5 minutes left, and no joke about barely scratching the surface. I mean, literally, you talk about up on the canopy, and there are many questions. So I have a couple of things that are kind of like down and dirty. Where are you going next? And then, of course, I always want to know your vision, your crystal ball for can we change it? Is there a vision of hope that you have? People like you and the other Carson scholars are what I need to. You're my medicine because a lot of the information out there about the situation of the planet is rather daunting, to say the least. But I want to be that message of hope, and I'm thrilled you're on the show, and I understood everything you said. So tell me about what you see happening down there, where you're headed, and in 5 minutes, can you believe it? It's like it makes me so sad.
Yeah, there's so much more to talk about. Next, I will be going back to the tops of the trees and also wandering around among the forests. I'll be going to the Amazon this summer, and I'll spend the entire next semester there. And I'll be doing a couple of things. One is participating in a campaign put on by a group of members in my lab to understand how the forest functions during the dry season in this drier area of the Amazon, because that can tell us a little bit about how the forest might respond to climate change as well, too, because over the Amazon, we expect the climate to get drier and droughts to increase, and we've already seen some major droughts occur in the recent years. So we want to understand how the forest responds to dry season, and what my part will be is partly looking at the plant community effect. Are there groups of species that stay really active during the dry season where others dry out?
Okay,
so that's part of it. And I'll be climbing into the trees because we're doing a lot of physiology measurements. Some of the measurements that I'll be taking is looking at the emissions of particular gases, not CO2 and water and oxygen, the regular ones, but actually one called isoprene, which a lot of plants emit, especially tropical forests. And isoprene actually interacts in the atmosphere, producing aerosol particles that cause water to condense and rain to fall. And the emission of isoprene from plants is very environmentally sensitive. So I'll be looking at how that changes throughout the season. And then also kind of on a separate project, trying to catalog how the distributions of characteristics of plants, like the functional traits that we call them, that mediate the interaction of plants with the atmosphere, how those suites of characteristics change across a precipitation gradient, so that we can understand in different areas of the Amazon how might it respond to a changing climate, especially being drier. So
just tell me, it's compelling. Like you reel me in with your story. So when you're on the tops of the trees, your daily life will look like taking pictures, taking samples, and then doing it for the amount of months that you're there and measuring differences. Is that the man on the streets version of what you'll do? It's so daunting to me.
Yep, that's basically it. We're just going to see, what do the trees do? Do different species do different things? And how do the things that they do change throughout the season?
Okay, scientific research. So you have a website. We should talk about that. We have about a minute and a half left.
Yep,
you have a website that people can get engaged in. It's a fun website, informative.
That's right, www.tyeneandmaz.com, T-Y-E-E-N and M-A-Z.com. And we'll be putting up videos and posts from the Amazon as we're down there. My girlfriend and I, Marielle Smith, and I will be putting up posts and videos while we're down there over this next semester. And just to say one thing about what people can do and give that sort of potential message of hope, Aldo Leopold said the first tenet of intelligent tinkering is to keep all of the parts, right? So anything that we can do to contribute to the maintenance and regeneration of forests will be useful.
Okay, so, oh my gosh, all of you that tuned in, you're as lucky as I am that you got to hear that. And I say that sincerely. I interview a lot of people, and this time flew. You're a great guest. You will please come back.
Thanks.
Because
yeah,
we'll
be
want to have an update after
the Amazon.
No kidding. Joining us tonight was Ty Taylor, a PhD student in ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona. And another thing people can do if they're moved is support the Carson Scholars Program
right.
at the Institute of the Environment.
More people like me do research for
important
the world.
Work. So I thank you on behalf of the planet.
this so
is Green's World Radio Network. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and tune in again on your computer. I say tune in because it's the vernacular. Next Tuesday night at 7, we'll have another great guest. But thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Make it a great green week, everybody.